Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the sixth day of November 2019. It's a Wednesday hump day. We're almost, well, we are halfway to the weekend. I'm Derek Hunter. This is the Daily Daily Caller podcast. Thank you for listening, sharing, telling a friend, spreading the word, and doing all that good stuff, patronizing the sponsors, helping out on Patreon. You people rock. You rock. Forget about you people. Don't pluralize it. Make it personal. It's you. You as an individual rock, and I thank you for that. Oh, man, we got a lot of stuff going on. New news and impeachment. Revised testimony that doesn't really change anything. You would never know it from the breathless media coverage, but thank God I'm here to tell you about what's really going on. Joe Biden has taken swipes at his fellow Democrats, which is kind of funny. And I have a confession to make. I watched Dancing with the Stars on Monday, and I feel dirty about it. But I'm glad I did, and I'll probably watch it again. I'll explain why. Plus, there's a massacre in Mexico. Mexico is essentially a failed state, and the sooner we recognize that and admit it, the better off we'll all be. But Democrats, of course, want open borders. What could possibly go wrong? A lot could go wrong. We'll get into all of that. If you want to enter to win the signed copy of Jesus on Trial by the one and only David Limbaugh, email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com, and you shall be entered. You'll have until tomorrow, Thursday, till about 10 p.m. to enter to win that book. So do that before then, or forever live without the signed David Limbaugh book. David is such a great guy. His book is selling like crazy, and awesome for him. Oh, as a programming note, my book, for some reason, Amazon changes their prices randomly, and if you wait for the right time, you can get them pretty good. My book, at least as of this recording, is on sale for $5.99 on Amazon, but you can only buy one. I don't know why. So Christmas is coming, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Boxing Day, a good Thanksgiving gift, I think, is my book. So if you want to pick it up for dirt cheap, there you go. Just head on over to Amazon. Should still be valid. I don't know. They do it randomly. They don't tell you when they're doing it. And then they stop doing it, and it goes back up to like a bunch of money. So if you want to get a copy of my book, now if you've been sitting around waiting going, I don't want to spend $17.99, well, now it's $5.99. So there you go. They're basically giving it away. Oh, like I said, lots of stuff to get to and tons of things to talk about and two insomniac kids running around in the background. The youngest one just looking for something to destroy. Just anything she can destroy. So you'll hear them playing in the background as well. But first, as we always do, we give a nice tip of the cap to our lovely, lovely sponsor. Joining me now is the man himself, the founder of Life Change Tea, Ronnie McMullen. How are you, Ronnie?
I'm doing good. How are you, Derek?
I am doing great, and it's no small part thanks to Life Change Tea. Tell me, how did you decide to go into the tea business?
I got sick. I got really ill, and somebody, you know, of course, I was on radio at the time, had a radio show, and one of my listeners called me and said, hey, if you're really sick, you might want to try this tea. So I said, well, tea, I don't even like tea, you know, and, well, try it. It'll really help you. So long story short, I tried the tea. It worked well. I ended up working with a doctor to formulate my own tea that basically works even better than the original one that I tried. And since then, we've added organic and non-GMO supplements. So the business has just grown, but the actual core of the business is the super strength tea that we sell. So it's really, it's been a blessing, and my health is, it's changed my health. So I'm very, very blessed by it.
Don't just take our word for it. Go to getthetea.com now and check it out for yourself. Learn about all the benefits there and enter the promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K at checkout and you get free shipping. Thank you for joining us, Ronnie. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Once again, that website is getthetea.com. Don't forget promo code Derek at checkout for free shipping. Love Life Change Tea. Love those guys. Good, good stuff. Well, first, where should I start? I'm going to start with the Jeffrey Epstein story. Project Veritas came out with another bombshell insider leaked video. If you've ever been on television, or if you ever plan to or want to be on television, I would first encourage you to find a different profession. Find another path. Don't do it. But if you must, if you lost the bet and you got to make good on it and you find yourself going on television, recognize that that little thing that they put on your lapel or on your collar or wherever they hide it is a microphone. And the second they clip it to you, you are being recorded somewhere by somebody. That's just how it is. You hear all these hot mic things. People forget all the time that they're wearing a microphone, whether it's, you know, Barack Obama telling the Russians that he'll have more flexibility after the election, or it is some news anchor who curses out their staff during commercial breaks, or like Lawrence O'Donnell, stop the damn hammering. You're always being recorded. Once you have that microphone on, you don't have to be sitting in front of a camera for it to be recorded. That microphone is live and it transmits quite a distance to wherever the sound booth is, wherever the control booth is. The control booths are not inside the studio, so it goes through walls. When somebody puts a microphone on you, it's best not to say anything until you're ready to say something for the whole world. Kind of reminds me of when I started in the U.S. Senate in 2006. I was told, never send an email that you don't want to see or you would feel uncomfortable seeing on the front page of the Washington Post. I assume that's just a story that they tell Republicans. Liberals are like, make sure you send all of your emails to the Washington Post. Forward every Republican email you get to the Washington Post. And if you hear a rumor, for the love of God, get it to the Washington Post if it's about a Republican. Actually, it doesn't matter. They'll sort it out. They'll only run the ones about Republicans. But you never want to be caught with a hot mic because it's always on. Yesterday, Amy Robach, who is a reporter over at ABC, learned that the hard way. ABC News in general learned that the hard way because she, back in August, late August, apparently, right after the Epstein suicide, or murder, she was caught on a hot mic on set. She should have known better, but when you wear these things all the time, you kind of forget that there's a microphone on you and you deal with the same people every day. You become very familiar, you let your guard down, and that's when I think people are most truthful. And I think Amy Robach was being incredibly truthful in the audio clips you're about to hear. She complains, much like Ronan Farrow did about what NBC News did to his Harvey Weinstein story, that she had the Jeffrey Epstein story dead cold, dead to rights, 3 years ago. 3 years ago, and she was met with pushback at ABC News, saying, you didn't have it, stop looking at this, let it go, never mind, move along, because, well, we don't really know why. ABC is very, very nervous, but if you remember, when Jeffrey Epstein got free from his pseudo-custody down in Florida from 2008, when he was convicted and sentenced to 13 months in custody, where he really wasn't in custody because rich people get away with all sorts of stuff. When he was able to go back to New York, he had a big welcome home dinner for friends like Woody Allen and George Stephanopoulos, who is the big news muckety-muck, essentially almost the face of ABC News. They have him on 6 days a week. And George was over at Jeffrey Epstein's place. So if your boss, if the big honcho in the news department over there, one of the big names, the biggest name in the news department, is buddies with Jeffrey Epstein, and you've got a story interviewing one of Jeffrey Epstein's victims for the first time, no matter how big that story might be, your boss, who's friends with Jeffrey Epstein, might just maybe have a problem with that. Maybe put some pressure on some of the other people who work there to make sure that story doesn't see the light of day. Because as disturbing as what ABC News is accused of doing here, it's even more disturbing when you understand the full context. This is 3 years ago, so Jeffrey Epstein's still alive. Jeffrey Epstein is a free man. It is 2016, and by all accounts, Jeffrey Epstein is still doing his wicked, perverted things. After having been released from custody, he went back to his old ways because it was working for him. The punishment he got was next to nothing. He got a sweetheart deal. So why wouldn't he? When you feel 10 feet tall and bulletproof, you do all kinds of stupid or evil things if you're so inclined to do those things. But in 2000, Jeffrey Epstein was convicted in 2008. He got out of custody, if you can call it that, in 2009. This story was ready to run, according to Amy Robach, in 2016. It's not as though people didn't know who or what Jeffrey Epstein was. Now, the general public may not remember who Jeffrey Epstein is, but he was as connected as anybody can get in Democratic Party politics. He had a lot of incredibly rich and powerful friends. There was ample reason why, you know, he wasn't a household name, but he should have been. And think about the number of girls that Epstein could have done his creepiness evil to in those 3 years that ABC News sat on this story. Just want to keep that in mind, because in essence, ABC News has a lot of guilt to share. And it turns out the reason that they had this guilt was because they were afraid. Epstein's attorneys had contacted them, don't do this. And the Buckingham Palace, because Prince Albert was good friends with Jeffrey Epstein, even having visited him in New York. So they decided that they would much rather have access, allegedly, to the royals than they would report a story about a well-connected, pervy, Democrat, mega donor, power broker, and his child molesting ways. With that, let's listen to the first clip of Amy Robach. Now, remember, she forgets. Well, I'm sure she doesn't forget that she's being recorded, but she thinks she's, you know, talking to friends. Somebody, somewhere in there, got their hands on this and released it. So she's getting, this is how people talk when they think nobody is listening.
I've had the story for 3 years. I've had this interview with Virginia Roberts. We would not put it on the air. First of all, I was told, who's Jeffrey Epstein? No one knows who that is. This is a stupid story. Then the palace found out that we had her whole allegations about Prince Andrew and threatened us a million different ways. We were so afraid we wouldn't be able to interview Kate and Will that also quashed the story. And then Alan Dershowitz was also implicated in because of the planes. She told me everything. She had pictures. She had everything. She was in hiding for 12 years. We convinced her to come out. We convinced her to talk to us. It was unbelievable what we had. Clinton. We had everything. I tried for 3 years to get it on to no avail. And now it's all coming out. And it's like these new revelations. And I freaking had all of it. I'm so pissed right now. Like every day I get more and more pissed because I'm just like, oh my God, what we had was unreal. Other women backing it up. Hey, yep. Brad Edwards, the attorney 3 years ago saying there will come a day when we will realize Jeffrey Epstein was the most prolific pedophile this country has ever known. I had it all 3 years ago.
Had it all 3 years ago. An interview with Virginia Giffrey, I believe is how you pronounce the name. One of Epstein's victims. Hadn't told her story, had kept it quiet, been basically in hiding for 12 years, willing to go on the record on camera with ABC News, did go on camera with ABC News, brought all of her evidence, photographs, everything that she had, and ABC News said, nope, not interested. Now, why would they do that? Well, they've released a statement, but buried in that live mic moment is a little hint as to maybe, just maybe, wild speculation here, but that seems to pass for journalism these days, why it is that ABC News would have killed such a story. Did you catch it? If not, here's an isolation of it.
Unbelievable what we had. Clinton, we had everything.
It just occurred to me that I might have said Prince Albert earlier, who's in a can, as everybody knows, and it's Prince Andrew. It doesn't matter. One of those weirdo royals that are ridiculous. But in order to protect the Clintons, maybe ABC News circled the wagons? Is that why? We don't know. But ABC News responded to this by releasing a statement from Amy Robach. Because they don't know what the hell to do. Amy Robach released a statement through ABC Public Relations. I'm sure she needs her job. I'm sure she loves her job. I'm sure she doesn't, you know, she was just frustrated with her bosses when the Epstein story was breaking of either his arrest or his death, his murderer. But so she was sounding off, going off on a microphone. And so Robach, probably not necessarily directly under the gun from her bosses, but it was implied, I'm sure, released the following statement. Quote, "As a journalist, as the Epstein story continued to unfold last summer, I was caught in a private moment of frustration. I was upset that an important interview I had conducted with Virginia Roberts didn't air because we couldn't obtain sufficient corroborating evidence to meet ABC's editorial standards about her allegations. My comments about Prince Andrew and her allegations that she had seen Bill Clinton on Epstein's private island were in reference to what Virginia Roberts said in the interview in 2015. I was referencing her allegations, not what ABC News had verified through our reporting. The interview itself, while I was disappointed it didn't air, didn't meet our standards. In the years since, no one has ever told me or the team to stop reporting on Jeffrey Epstein, and we have continued to aggressively pursue this important story." End quote. That doesn't really jive with what you heard there. It was, who's Jeffrey Epstein? Nobody knows who this guy is. Who cares? Whatever. We've got it all. We've got all this stuff. She wasn't saying we were so close. We were so close. If they would have just let me go a little bit further, we could have landed all of this. No, she said she had it. She nailed it. She landed it. But ABC News did not allow it to. They still haven't aired the interview, by the way. Jeffrey Epstein is dead. What else did she say? Who else did she talk about? If she was talking about Bill Clinton and what she's alleged to have seen Bill Clinton doing on Pedophile Island, wouldn't it be interesting to hear that? But in 2015, 2016, when Robach was running down this story, there was something else going on that involved the Clintons, and it involved Hillary Clinton running for president of the United States. She was, in fact, a shoo-in at this time. She was a shoo-in up until the point that they counted votes. So if ABC News is willing to spike this story, at least in part, according to Robach at the time, to keep getting access to the royals to maybe get an interview with Will and Kate. Ooh, could you imagine? British royals. Oh, we can sit down and talk to them. To maybe get that kind of access to insignificant people whose only accomplishment in life is being born to a certain family. What do you think they'd be willing to do to continue to get access to the Clintons? Do you think they might spike allegations against Bill Clinton that he was a little friendlier than he should have been with the people on Pedophile Island? We don't know. They've never run the tape. They could run the tape. Like I said, Jeffrey Epstein is dead. A whole bunch of stuff is known now about Jeffrey Epstein and the allegations against him. But curiously, ABC is uncurious. CNN is completely incurious. They didn't bother covering this story because Project Veritas brought it out, and they like to pretend that Project Veritas doesn't exist because they've been burned by Project Veritas. It's, you know, they're a news organization over there at CNN. They just don't report the news. that is convenient, inconvenient to them, or that is brought forth by people they don't like who have done mean things, reported mean things about CNN. It's a total joke. But just think about how many girls a pedophile, like a serial pedophile like Jeffrey Epstein, could have violated in those 3 years that ABC News kept this story buried, hid this story from the public. Now imagine a news organization that has potentially damaging information about a former president of the United States whose wife was on the cusp of becoming the future president of the United States. Wouldn't that be something the American public would like to know? Should know? Might it have informed some voters to perhaps vote a little differently? Depending on when this story was ready and when they spiked it, it could have come out during the primary. Maybe Bernie Sanders would have won the nomination back in 2016. Who knows? We don't. We're only left to speculate because, again, ABC News has such high standards that they couldn't possibly even consider running this story and allowing the reporting of this interview. Now, in an interview, a reported piece is way different. If it's a reporter doing a package, you have to verify those facts. You can't really make the just wild accusations or claims, or at least you used to not be able to. But if it is an interview of somebody making allegations, you absolutely have massive leeway. This was an editorial decision based on content, not on corroboration. Because if you remember, just last year when Brett Kavanaugh was the nominee for the Supreme Court, ABC News had zero problem whatsoever running interviews with Julie Swetnick. ABC News had no problem whatsoever running interviews with Michael Avenatti about Julie Swetnick and any other thing that he decided to throw out there. For those packages, for those stories, there was no corroboration. Nobody came forward to back up Michael Avenatti and Julie Swetnick's allegations that Brett Kavanaugh was running gang rape parties as a 15-year-old in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Nobody believed it. Nobody remembered it. Nobody said anything about it. Nobody backed it up. I don't think anybody even really remembered Julie Swetnick because she didn't go to that school. She lived further. She lived far out. She lived in like Germantown or something like that, or Frederick, Maryland, nowhere near Chevy Chase for, you know, in high school miles. They're not that far. They're like 20 miles away from each other. But in high school miles, that's another world completely. But ABC News and Good Morning America and ABC Nightly News or World News Tonight or whatever the hell it's called, they had no problem whatsoever running those stories nonstop. They didn't even, if I remember correctly, throw in the caveat that if they wanted to run this interview, they could have easily run this interview with the following caveat, because they do it all the time. ABC News is unable to independently verify this information. You hear that constantly, yet it's still reported. Oh, they have somebody on who's in the news. They just go back to the probably the most famous murder trial of all time. They had members of the Goldman family on and members of the Brown family on. They would interview them on all these shows where they would say what they believed to be true, which was probably true, about O.J. Simpson. By the editorial standards that ABC News is now claiming involving the Jeffrey Epstein story, they would not have run those stories. They could not have run those stories. They could not have run those interviews because they could not independently verify that O.J. Simpson had decapitated Ron and Brown and Nicole. Yet they did. They did constantly. They do constantly, because it's one thing for a news organization to make a declaration, whereas it's another thing entirely for a subject of an interview to make an allegation or an assertion as fact. ABC News is lying to you in this statement, in other words. They aren't coming close to the truth in this statement. What is the truth? We don't know. I suspect that ABC News will do its best to try and avoid this any media attention for the next few days. They'll try and back away from this. They'll try and hope that it goes away, and their fellow travelers in the media will go right along with it. Because I guarantee you, if it got to this point with Amy Robach at ABC News, to the point that she was talking to Epstein victims and she had the dirt on Clinton and everybody else and Prince Andrew and so on and so forth, I guarantee you she wasn't the only reporter, and ABC News was not the only news organization on the story, or at least that could have been and should have been and normally would have been on this story, were it not an election year, were it not involving Bill Clinton, were it not involving Democrats, were it not involving access to the royals in the future. This whole thing stinks to high heaven. It's yet another example of just how corrupt our media is. Yeah, we know that they trade access. They bury stories. They spike stories in order to get access. They frame things in favorable ways. The New York Times the other day had a story, a profile about Adam Schiff. It was glowing and embarrassing, and it glossed over his involvement in the Russia hoax. It just glossed over. It's, oh, you came to prominence because of this. They completely ignored the countless lies that he told about how, you know, oh, geez, I've got all the evidence of collusion. It's right here, and we'll be exposing it soon. Whatever happened to that? They memory-holed that because they're on the same team, and they made a glowing profile of him. As a matter of fact, I just pulled up the story. And it's glorious. It's a long story. It took two reporters. The New York Times actually put two reporters on it, Cheryl Gay Stolberg and Nicholas Fandos, to pull together this glowing love affair profile with Adam Schiff, the title of which is Adam Schiff, a Trump Punching Bag, Takes His Case to a Bigger Ring. The subheadline, Mr. Schiff leads the impeachment inquiry into President Trump. Depending on one's viewpoint, he will either save the Republic or destroy it, depending on your viewpoint. And then they go ahead and present only one viewpoint. The only mention of Russia, which, by the way, unless you lived in his district, is likely the only reason you know Adam Schiff, who Adam Schiff is the Russia investigation and his interference that he ran for Hillary Clinton in Benghazi. Was these two paragraphs, and that's it. This is as close to they come to acknowledging that there's another side to Adam Schiff, or there's another opinion of Adam Schiff, but they don't really even frame it that way. They write, quote, his breakout moment came in 2014 when the Republican-led House established a committee to investigate the attacks on the American diplomatic compound in Benghazi, Libya. Mr. Schiff had argued that Democrats should not participate in what he viewed as a partisan exercise, but Ms. Pelosi put him on the committee. But it was the election of Mr. Trump that elevated Mr. Schiff's profile and made him a sought-after speaker and fundraiser in Democratic circles. When Republicans still had the majority, he vigorously investigated Russian election interference and questions around whether the Trump campaign had compromised with hostile foreign actors, becoming the most recognizable public face, explaining the biggest story in Washington on national TV. When Democrats won the majority in the House, he helped Ms. Pelosi draft a broad investigative strategy. That's it. That's the only mention of Russia. Not that he'd been running around for more than a year saying, we have evidence of collusion. We've got it. This is impeachable. Donald Trump is clearly corrupt. We've got the evidence. There's no mention of that. It's just a complete whitewashing of Adam Schiff and his entire reason for being known to anybody outside of his district. That they would do something similar to Jeffrey Epstein, kind of whitewash. Oh, you know what? Yeah, he's a pedophile, but that was so long. That was like 10 years ago, dude. Why are we bothering to talk about this? It just makes Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton look bad. It makes all the Democrats that he was pals with look bad. It makes George Stephanopoulos of ABC News look bad. So ABC spiked the story. This should be a major scandal. This should launch an investigation. But just like the case of Ronan Farrow over at NBC News, who had all the goods on Harvey Weinstein, and the New York Times said, or NBC News said, no, we're not going to run that. We don't feel like you have the story, and stop investigating it, by the way. And again, the Clinton fingerprints are on that story as well. When Hillary Clinton's personal assistant, who Ronan Farrow was trying to sit down with to interview her about his book on foreign policy, basically said, we won't really talk to you if you're going to go and dig into this Weinstein stuff. The Clintons, again, ran blocker for Weinstein. Were the Clintons running blocker for Epstein? What exactly did ABC News know, and when did they know it? And more importantly, why did they not want us to know it? ABC News, what is there? More Americans get their news from ABC News than from any other source. But they only get the news that ABC News deems important enough, not, you know, the greatest, most prolific pedophile in U.S. history, billionaire, pal of powerful Democrats, major fundraiser. That's not news. Some local, you know, sheriff Republican said something or tweeted something 5 years ago, and in his rural town, and that is a bigger story. That's worth knowing. What the Clintons were up to, not so much. I always say it because it remains true. It's good to be a Democrat. Man, it is good to be a Democrat. They can get away with damn near murder, or murder if in the case of Ted Kennedy. And nobody bats an eye about it, and nobody will bother reporting on it because, well, why would they? You're a Democrat. You're on their team. Another case in point happened yesterday when the big news in the impeachment witch hunt was that Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to the European Union, allegedly revised his testimony. He went back and he did some soul searching, and he discovered that he remembered mention of a quid pro quo. And the media immediately stopped all the presses. The freakout began. Oh, my God. There it is. Somebody in Trump's inner circle finally said it's a quid pro quo with Ukraine. The only problem is it really wasn't. It was him talking to somebody else unrelated about what he felt was going on at that particular time. It kind of contradicts what he said before, but only in the sense that he said nobody ever mentioned quid pro quo. And he said, oh, yeah, I guess I did. Or we talked about it before. The Daily Caller has the story. Chuck Ross. Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to the European Union, said he now recalls speaking with a top advisor to Ukrainian President Zelensky in early September about U.S. military aid that had been withheld from Ukraine, according to revised congressional testimony he gave to lawmakers Monday. Sondland said in his updated statement that he told the Zelensky aide, Edrini Yermak, doesn't really matter. You never heard of him. You'll never hear of him again. During a conversation in Warsaw on September 1st, that he believed, quote, resumption of U.S. aid would likely not occur until Ukraine provided public anti-corruption statement that we had been discussing for many weeks. Oh, my God. So the Trump administration was really interested in anti-corruption stuff? They wanted anti-corruption. They were against corruption in Ukraine, giving them piles of our money, and saying you got to get rid of corruption if you're going to continue to get piles of our money. And this is their big, big blockbuster. Sondland told Kurt Volker, the Ukrainian special envoy, worked through the summer with Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani as part of an effort to get Zelensky to publicly commit to opening an investigation into whether Joe Biden interfered in 2016 to shut down an investigation into Burisma Holdings, a Ukrainian energy company that had Hunter Biden as a board member. Democrats have accused Trump of withholding the aid as part of a quid pro quo in order to pressure Zelensky to commit to investigations of Burisma and the Bidens. Sondland, who initially testified in Congress on October 17th, said he did not have direct knowledge about why military aid had been withheld. Sondland, quote, did not know and still does not know when or why or by whom the aid was suspended, he said in the supplemental testimony. So again, he has no firsthand information. Quote, and this is again from the revised statement, quote, by the beginning of September 2019 and in the absence of any credible explanation for the suspension of aid, I presumed that the aid suspension had become linked to the proposed anti-corruption statements, end quote, Sondland said in the revised statement. Now, isn't that interesting? I presume. He has no knowledge. He has no reason to know. He is not the ambassador to Ukraine. He is ambassador to the European Union, which is a glorified political post. And he just presumed. I presume to know. In a statement, White House Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham highlighted that Sondland said he merely presumed there was a link between military aid and the Burisma investigations. She said Sondland, quote, cannot identify any solid source for that assumption. Politico broke the story on August 28th that the State Department and Pentagon had blocked hundreds of millions in military assistance to Ukraine in its fight against Russia. It has since been reported that Trump instructed the White House chief of staff in mid-July. Sondland said in his revised statement that his memory about his conversation with Yermak was refreshed after reading opening statements given by Bill Taylor, the acting ambassador to Ukraine, and Tim Morrison, a top White House advisor on European issues. So he had to go back and he had to issue four more pages. And there's really nothing in there. Sondland said in his testimony in October that Trump told him in a September 8th phone call that he wanted, quote, nothing from Zelensky. What do you want from the president? Or what do you want me to tell the Ukrainians? What do you want from the Ukrainians? Sondland testified, he asked. And the president responded, nothing. I want no quid pro quo, Trump said, according to Sondland. President finished, quote, I want Zelensky to do the right thing, end quote. That was it. Again, no quid pro quo. We're only dealing with what somebody presumed was going on. Somebody who didn't know what was going on was not in a position, apparently, to ask what was going on. They instead just presumed what was going on. And this is another one of those Democrats think they have a smoking gun here, but they don't. Yet that flimsy secondhand assumption on behalf of Sondland led the news yesterday. It was one of the big stories of the day. Holy cow, all day long on CNN, it was, they've got him another. They're admitting this quid pro quo. No such thing whatsoever. By the way, ABC News also reported on this. It is a presumption from a guy uninvolved in direct knowledge, yet they didn't couch it with the caveat that ABC News has not independently verified this information. They just ran with it, which, if you're applying the Epstein standard that they applied, would not be reportable, according to ABC News. But again, when it involves a Republican, why, that's all you need to know. It's this damn Republicans. You gotta get them. Let's go get them. It's so corrupt, so pathetic, so transparent, and it is a mess. And the Democrats are going to try and dine out on this until the American people learn about it the way I just told you about it and actually read you what he said rather than secondhand knowledge of what he said and the liberal spin of what he said. And they're going to collectively yawn yet again. And then the Democrats will go back and try and find another big old gotcha smoking gun moment. Oh, man. Okay. I want to touch briefly. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this situation down in Mexico and the massacre of 9 Americans. Horrible situation, gruesome ambush. of people who, at least by now or by accounts at this point, were doing nothing but driving and were ambushed by one of the cartels down in Mexico, shot up, women and children murdered, burned alive, allegedly raped, everything horrible you can possibly imagine happened down there to these people, according to what we're hearing at this point. The president, to his credit, is not taking this sitting down, nor should he. He offered basically to help in any way possible, whatever way Mexico needs, because Mexico is an absolute mess. It is a failed state. It is a disgrace. And it's right on our southern border where they're just allowing people to come walking into the United States. And their president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, has been a complete waste of time. But we kind of knew that going in. President Trump basically offered, look, we'll send our military down there. We'll take care of this if you need the help. If you can't do it, we'll do it for you. That's no problem. The president tweeted, quote, "This is the time for Mexico, with the help of the United States, to wage war on the drug cartels and wipe them off the face of the earth. If Mexico needs or requests help in cleaning out these mobsters, the United States stands ready, willing, and able to get involved and do the job quickly and effectively." Well, the president of Mexico, López Obrador, has no interest in that. Quote, "We have to act independently and according to our constitution and in line with our tradition of independence and sovereignty. War is irrational. We are for peace. It is a characteristic of this new government." So now you have a sense of what we're dealing with down in Mexico as far as the government goes. I suspect we're going to learn a lot more about this story in the coming days, and I don't want to wildly speculate about it. The details are gruesome, but there's always more to this. What it is, I don't know, whether it's mistaken identity or they targeted these people for whatever reason. I suspect it will come out. But what's telling here is that President López Obrador of Mexico has no real interest in taking down the cartels or even really taking on the cartels. It was about 2 or 3 weeks ago when the son of Juan El Chapo Guzman was arrested by the Mexican police. And the cartel that he runs, whatever the hell it's called, literally started waging war in the streets of that city until the police gave up and released El Chapo's son. They just released him. Could you imagine a situation where the drug cartels are running rampant through the street, automatic weapons, firing on everybody, firing on police, getting in shootouts with the police? And the police back down and say, okay, here you go. Here is this wanted fugitive. You can have him back, this drug lord. Mexico is a complete and total failure. Yet here is the president of Mexico saying, war is irrational. We are for peace. It is a characteristic of this new government. Well, so is incompetence, apparently, and or corruption. I'll give them, it could be either one of those two. They're either incredibly incompetent or wildly corrupt, or some sort of peanut butter and jelly mix of the two. That seems just as likely as well. But the president of the United States should militarize our southern border. He can deploy troops down there for national security purposes because these 9 Americans who were murdered while living in Mexico are not the only people who have been murdered along the Mexican border by members of the drug cartels. See, this is why we can't have nice things. This is why we can't win wars anymore. We involve the politicians to the point that they're deciding what is and isn't acceptable, what is and isn't victory. It should just be, these people are our enemy. Surrender or die. We're not looking for peace. We're not looking for peaceful coexistence. This is what the Mexican government should do. We're coming in and we're taking you. Or we're coming in and we're taking your body out. Whatever we have to do. You people are reprehensible. You're disgusting people. You're responsible for tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of deaths across the globe every year with your drug trade, not to mention the people that you shoot on the streets. You have forfeited your right to exist if you do not surrender. That's plain and simple. It's how we should have gone into Afghanistan. We're not trying to take prisoners from Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. We're just coming in to kill you. That's it. We're bringing you justice. You're part of a terroristic organization that attacked the United States. Just because you're a junior member doesn't mean you get a free pass and 5 years in Rikers and then you're released and all is forgiven. No, you are on their team. Their team is the enemy. You will be treated as such. The same thing should be done with these cartels. You have chosen a side. You have chosen poorly. You have chosen the quick money and the glamorous lifestyle and, you know, the bikini models. And congratulations, I bet you had a lot of fun. But if you happen to come across somebody in the U.S. military while trying to mule a bunch of fentanyl across the southern border, you will not be chased down and given the opportunity to run back to Mexico where you can give it another shot at another border point some point in the future. There's going to be a helicopter strike called in and your vehicle will be blown up. You will be killed, plain and simple. End of story. That's the way it should be. That's the way it could be, but instead we have politicians. Oh, we need to make sure that everybody's rights are protected. Yes, we do need to make sure our rights are protected, our right to sovereignty. And when people violate that and violate it continually, and if they fire on American law enforcement, for example, they then should be fired upon back. We should have the right to go and chase them down if they're, this is, if you ever watch like Bonnie and Clyde, or some movie about the gangster days of the teens and 20s. Before the FBI, the bank robbers always knew they had to run to the border. They had to cross from one state into another because then the police chasing them had no jurisdiction. They couldn't do anything about it. As soon as you cross into Oklahoma, we're free. We're done. We got away with it. Well, then the FBI came along and the state lines blurred when it came to law enforcement. We can't allow the southern border to be like that. We can't allow the southern border to be this situation where it's just, hey, man, once you go back into Mexico, we're done. We can't go after you. So if you're muling money out or drugs in or people in or whatever, once you get out, it's all good. Congratulations. You're back in Mexico. You get away and get a chance to do it again. Can't be that. We should change the law that we can pursue people across the southern border. And if Mexico has a problem with that, Mexico can stop them from entering the United States illegally in the first place. It'd be a pretty simple proposition. Securing the border is much more effective if you do it from both sides. The problem is that López Obrador and his government don't seem to have any interest in doing that because, well, aside from tourism, the drug trade is one of the biggest employers in the country of Mexico. Certainly one of the few growth industries, and I don't know why anybody, you couldn't pay, I have no interest in going to Mexico ever. I went there when I was 13 years old, when I was in San Diego visiting my aunt with my mom and dad. We went to Tijuana. And I was bored. It was nothing. It was Tijuana during the day. You're 13 years old. What are you supposed to do? But I never had a desire to go to Mexico. I have no desire to go back to Mexico. I don't know why anybody would. Oh, we're honeymooning in Mexico. I tend to stay away from places where kidnapping for ransom is one of the major industries in a country. That's just me. I'm old-fashioned, I guess. Like I said, we'll know more about that in a day or two, and we'll look at it then. I just, these stories, we don't know anything yet. It doesn't stop people from talking about them. But we definitely cannot sit back and allow this to go unanswered. And if Mexico isn't willing to do anything about it, then we have to be willing to do something about it. Mexico is the murder capital of the world. I mean, 100,000 people murdered. The murder rate is exponentially higher than the United States of America. It's a third world country. It's a third world hellhole. It's a failed state with a horrible economy outside of the nice pockets where people go on vacation. Don't go on vacation. A couple of other things here. Do you remember the name E. Jean Carroll? Probably not. when I play these couple of clips that I have of her to refresh your memory of just how crazy she is, you'll remember she accused the president of having raped her back in the 90s, in the early 90s, in a department store dressing room or something like that. Not really a credible story, kind of crazy, but she tried to sell books. It didn't work out. But she tried to sell books, and bless her heart. Well, she's filed a defamation lawsuit against President Trump, saying that his comments denying her claims that he raped her in the department store are defamation. That's defamation. You denied you raped me. That's defamation. You've ruined my reputation. You must pay me millions of dollars. In other words, her book didn't sell, and so she needs another source of income. It's, of course, a total and complete scam, but just to remind you of who E. Jean Carroll is, she's apparently some kind of journalist. I don't know. I've never heard of her before this came out, but she was a liberal darling. She was all over CNN and MSNBC. Ooh, boy, howdy. She was the toast of the town. She was, again, one of those things that Democrats pin their hopes on. Ooh, she says Donald Trump raped her. Well, this will get rid of Donald Trump. And then people got to listen to her. And they realized just how crazy she was. And suddenly, the name E. Jean Carroll stopped being spoken in the liberal media, which is a telltale sign. If they think they got Donald Trump, they don't like, I mean, they held on to Russia for what, 2 years, 2.5 years? When they think they have Trump, and they hold on to it until they're sure they don't. And then they pretend that they never held on to it. E. Jean Carroll was sort of a, not even a flavor of the month. She was a flavor of the week, because once she started talking, she came off as absolutely bat excrement crazy. If E. Jean Carroll wants to sue anybody for defamation, it should be suing herself, because she was a lunatic. Let's listen. She was on with Anderson Cooper, right? Good old Anderson Cooper, talking about the president having raped her. Anderson, you could not find a more receptive audience, a more willing and wanting audience for this story to be true. But Anderson Cooper stopped having her on. Why? Well, because of this.
You don't use the word rape.
Sexual violence is in every country, in every strata of society, and I just feel that so many women are undergoing sexual violence. Mine was short. I got out. I'm happy now. I'm moving on. And I think of all the women who are enduring constant sexual violence. So this one instant, this one, what, 3 minutes in this little dressing room, I just say it's a fight. That way I'm not the victim, right? I'm not the victim.
You don't feel like a victim.
I was not thrown on the ground and ravished. Which the word rape carries so many sexual connotations. This was not sexual.
But I think most people think of rape as a, I mean, it is a violent assault. It is not.
I think most people think of rape as being sexy. Mm.
Let's take a short break.
Think of the fantasies.
Mm. We're just going to take a quick break. If you can stick around, we'll talk more on the other side.
You're fascinating to talk to.
As soon as she says most people think of rape as sexy, Anderson, like, we're going to take a quick break. And she just keeps on going with the crazy. You can see that this woman is not, she's weird. Let's just put it that way. I don't want to say that she's clinically insane, but she probably is. She may well be. What she's saying certainly is bizarre. Would, I think, give people in the mental health profession pause. But she waited for this information. Donald Trump was one of the most famous people on the planet. But once he becomes president and she's got a book coming out, it wasn't until she had a book coming out, not that he became president, her book came out this year. Did she bother to tell anybody this alleged allegation? And then she refuses to call it rape because people think of rape as sexy. What? But you'd think, well, that's just crazy. One time anybody can have a bad interview. Oh, no. Like I said, she was the darling of the liberal media. she didn't sell very many copies of her book, but it was not for lack of media attention. She was on every show constantly for that week. And then they realized that everything she said made everything crazier and crazier, and they were making themselves look bad by associating with her, so they stopped. She appeared on the Lawrence O'Donnell show, The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell, and he asked her a very sensible question. That is basically, are you going to press charges of rape against Donald? If you say he raped you, shouldn't you then go press charges? Seems rational, seems like a good question. I'm surprised it came out of Lawrence's mouth. But her answer was not only no, but the reason for the no was, again, yet another sort of exposure of just how crazy this woman might be.
Would you consider bringing a rape charge against Donald Trump for this? Why not?
I would find it disrespectful to the women who are down on the border, who are being raped around the clock down there without any protection. They're young women. They've, you know, tried to come into the country. They're, as you know, they're there by the thousand. The women have very little protection there. It would just be disrespectful if I, you know, and mine was 3 minutes. I'm a mature woman. I can handle it. I can keep going. You know, my life has gone on. I'm a happy woman. But for the women down there, and for the women, actually, around the world, you know, in every culture, this is going on, no matter high in society or low in society. It just seems disrespectful that I would bring it just doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense to her to bring a rape charge. Accusing an allegation? Sure, yeah, a wild allegation that is unproven and yet undisprovable. That's fine, but that's not disrespectful at all. But actually, you know, holding it up to any sort of legal standard, that is, that's disrespectful. Yet she's suing the president for defamation. Because why? Did she not listen to herself? Did she not listen to anything? No, Donald Trump's denial of my wild allegations. Oh, by the way, again, ABC did, of course, cover the E. Jean Carroll rape by Donald Trump back in the early 90s allegation from this woman. No proof. There was no caveat attached to the ABC News report about, you know, ABC News has not independently verified that this thing happened. It's just, here's a crazy lady accusing the president of rape. Go buy her book because what she's saying fits our narrative. It's nuts. Speaking of nuts, crazy Uncle Joe Biden, sniffy Joe. He is, he's out there, he's having a tough time. He's slipping in the polls. And so in an attempt to prove how much of a Democrat he is, he's again missing an opportunity where he could stand up to the lunatics. He almost does. He kind of does a little bit. But he doesn't expand it to the whole of the country. He's just talking about Democrats. He came out with an op-ed yesterday on his health care. The headline at medium.com is, "I have fought for the Democratic Party my whole career." And he means that because he's never actually held a real job. He's only been involved in politics, which those types of people scare the hell out of me. So the other day I was accused by one of my opponents of running in the wrong primary. Elizabeth Warren basically said, if you don't support full-blown socialized medicine, maybe you should be a Republican. Pretty amazing. On one level, it's kind of funny. I have fought for the Democratic Party my whole career. I know what we stand for, who we stand with, and what we believe. Shouldn't you stand with all the American people if you're going to run for president? But Democrats don't believe that. And it's not just policies or issues. It's in my bones. That's not something everyone in this primary can say. That right there is a swipe at the two other leading Democrats. Bernie Sanders, who I still don't know if he's actually an official member of the Democratic Party. He was always an independent senator from Vermont. He was a socialist, self-vowed socialist. And the other person he's taking a swipe at there is right back at Elizabeth Warren, who up until the late 1990s was a Democrat in good standing. She claims that she changed because she got to learn bankruptcy laws. which doesn't really make any sense. Also, how can you change on literally everything because of one thing? That's just not how life works. Joe goes on to lecture about how we need to get along, how we all are working for the same thing. He said, but on another level, these kind of attacks are a serious problem. They reflect an angry, unyielding viewpoint that has crept into our politics. If someone doesn't agree with you, it's not just that you disagree. That person must be a coward or corrupt or a small thinker. See, now Joe Biden is kind of onto something. He's parroting what Barack Obama said the other day about cancel culture and you need to get over yourselves and stop whining and complaining and tweeting a hashtag is not activism, which is kind of rich considering all his administration did in regards to those Sudanese girls, I think it was, who were kidnapped by Boko Haram. Remember, they had the hashtag bring back our girls. All they did was tweet a sad picture of Michelle Obama holding a sign that says hashtag bring back our girls. No girls were recovered because of it, but that was considered activism by the Obama administration. Joe Biden is trying to capitalize on what Barack Obama said in scolding the cancel culture, but he's only talking about Democrats. It's not just that those you disagree with, that person must be a coward or corrupt or a small thinker. Only Democrats who disagree. So it's kind of funny that this whole thing is lost. He then goes on to try and justify his expansion of Obamacare, which is just basically socialized medicine light. But Joe Biden taking some fire. You can tell he's getting a little nervous because he's now doing what he didn't want to do. He's attacking other. He didn't even want to acknowledge that other Democrats were running for the longest time. It's not because these other Democrats are so great that they overtook him. It's that he's been so terrible that he's collapsed. And I'm not really sure that going after Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren is the best way to recover the people that he lost. But we shall see. And finally today, the saddest story, a commentary on humanity, comes from right here in Maryland, Prince George's County. Man stabbed to death in Maryland Popeyes after altercation over chicken sandwich, police say. I've never had a Popeyes chicken sandwich. I've never actually had Popeyes. The only sort of fast food chicken I've ever had is Kentucky Fried Chicken, obviously. And then I've had Royal Farms chicken once on a road trip. Wasn't bad. It's no KFC, but it's not bad. Popeyes, I've always been told, just tastes like deep-fried breaded Crisco. That is really, really greasy. So I've never been in a hurry to get it. I've just never been in a hurry. I don't eat at KFC very often either. But the chicken sandwich that they had about a month ago was apparently wildly popular, and people were paying hundreds or thousands of dollars for them on eBay after. I don't know why you make a sandwich that's limited time only. How throw a bun on there, and you've got the sandwich again, I think. If it's so wildly popular, well, they finally brought it back. And somebody immediately got killed over it. The Fox 5 in D.C. reports, a fight over someone cutting in line led to a fatal stabbing Monday night at a Maryland Popeyes. Prince George's County police say they received reports of a fight at a Popeyes, the location, blah, 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 Oxon Hill, around 7 p.m. According to police, the fight initially began in line when a man cut in front of another man, and then the altercation escalated and spilled outside where one of the men was stabbed. The suspect, as of this moment, is still at large. The guy who was killed was 28 years old. They don't know who did it. But it is a sad commentary, really, on the state of humanity, to be perfectly honest. A chicken sandwich. A chicken sandwich. Just give it a rest, okay? Let it go. There's going to be plenty of them. Don't stab anybody over food. That's a good rule of thumb, is don't stab anybody over anything. But if you can't handle that, which apparently far too many people can't handle that, then just try baby steps. Don't stab anybody over food. If that's asking too much, stab yourself. Can I just say that? stab yourself. And on that charming note, we are out of time. I appreciate you listening. Thanks for telling a friend. The website, if you want to help support the show, is patreon.com/Derek Hunter. Derek Hunter podcast. The email, Derek@dailycaller.com. If you want to enter to win the signed copy of David Limbaugh's Jesus on Trial, then the email is the same. If you just want to complain about the program, whatever you got to say. Thank you for sharing this, rating and reviewing on iTunes. I appreciate we're fast approaching 1,000 star ratings. So thank you for just going in there and clicking. Need three written reviews on iTunes to get to 250. Another, the stars, a lot of people do that, but the actual taking the time of writing a sentence, I read them all, and I'm flattered by all of them. If you take time to write a couple of sentences, give a 5-star review on iTunes, I would appreciate that as well. It's Wednesday. Wednesday, that just means Thursday and Friday, and then we reach the weekend again. I assume you cannot wait, because I cannot wait. I'll see you tomorrow.
It was unbelievable what we had. Clinton, we had everything.